Please silence all electronic devices.
I'm sorry, folks. I don't trust them. And our folks don't trust them.
There is a great deal of overreaction from those who are criticizing this legislation. They will see me in court. You know, if the General Assembly were really trying to do a power grab, there's a lot of things the General Assembly could do, and we weren't.
And they don't have a very good track record there.
Any further discussion or debate?
From the Legislative Press Dungeon in downtown Raleigh, it's almost 5 o'clock on Wednesday, September 4th, 2019. I'm Jeff Tiberi with, I don't know if this is an emergency edition of the WNC Politics Podcast or what, but it is an edition of the Politics Podcast that comes as a major hurricane is bearing down on the United States, and it comes as we got major news yesterday. Call it a landmark decision, call it a significant ruling. We'll get into all that. Lots of uncertainty, but a major development yesterday in North Carolina politics. Here to discuss a three-judge panel which ruled North Carolina's legislative districts are unconstitutional partisan gerrymanders are a couple of my colleagues here at the State House, Gary Robertson from the Associated Press, Lauren Horsch from the NC Insider. Hi, thanks for being here. How are you?
Tired.
There's a storm brewing on Jones Street, too, I think.
All right. Let me rewind quickly to yesterday. I'm in the newsroom in Durham. Adam Hochberg, who is now one of our editors, now formerly a State House reporter, turned to me and said, so, hey, what's the hurricane surprise going to be? And I was like, what do you mean? And he was like, back when I was at the legislature, there often was like some legislative surprise, something that would come up whenever a hurricane came. And I was like, I don't know, Adam. A few hours later, I'm sitting there at the State Emergency Operations Center. I'm right behind you, Gary, and I'm looking down. The governor starts to talk about hurricane preparedness and dealing with Dorian, urging people on the barrier islands to evacuate. And it felt to me like, Lord, we just did this thing with Florence. Like, we were just here. So as the governor is talking, and there is a little bit of like a groundhog deja vu feel, I look down. Somebody has sent me a tweet from Daniel Jacobson, an attorney for the plaintiffs in this recent partisan gerrymandering trial. And the tweet, which I think most of the listeners of this podcast probably saw on Tuesday afternoon, reads, "We just won our NC state court gerrymandering lawsuit! The trial court struck down the current state house and state senate plans and required that new plans be drawn immediately." That was the tweet. And I thought, oh my God, there's no way that this is happening right now. Gary, what was running through your head in that moment?
Well, when you ended up talking and asking Governor Cooper at the hurricane news conference if he had any comment on this ruling, that was the first I had heard about it. I was definitely focused, laser focused on hurricane and what was the governor going to say about that. And so it wasn't a shock in the sense we knew that something would be coming soon, but to have it happen at that moment, when there was a confluence of other events, it was pretty stunning.
Lauren, you were here at the legislature. If you would just censor yourself, but share what your reaction was upon seeing that tweet and understanding that this ruling had come.
Well, yeah, I was down here alone, so there was I did yell an expletive or two when I saw Jacobson's tweet, because Gary had actually just left to go to the briefing, and I was like, oh no, I'm the only one here. And it was also a double whammy because Labor Day weekend just happened, and I think a lot of us assumed this ruling would come down on a Friday before a holiday. That's usually when the news dump happens. So to have it come down, you know, in the middle of hurricane preparedness, I guess, you know, is another surprise for us. But it was just, I think I was shocked when I saw it because we also didn't have the ruling in front of us.
Right. And we saw the tweet, but we didn't have the multiple 100 pages.
And it's a monster ruling. It's 357 pages. And so I didn't know, okay, so they won, but on what merits? Was it unanimous?
Was it 2-1 split?
Where did the numbers lie? What were their reasonings? And I think it took maybe 30 minutes to an hour before the ruling got posted online. So I'm like frantically trying to figure out what's going on and, you know, alerting my colleagues at the NNO. And just, for me, it was pure chaos for a good, you know, hour, maybe waiting to figure out the details of it.
I think that there was a lot of uncertainty in that moment. I think still today, just about 24 hours after we weathered, no pun intended, but maybe slightly intended, that news, there's still a lot of uncertainty, right? A few of the things that I'm wondering about as we sit here today, why there wasn't an appeal from Republican legislative defendants when many of the lawyers and staffers and lawmakers had said straight up to me that they were planning to appeal regardless of the outcome. So no appeal. What are the next steps? Will congressional maps be challenged here in North Carolina? Is there enough time to do that? How will this ruling and eventually the redraw affect incumbents? And there are a lot of other things that I'm wondering about at this point. I want to get into the ruling a little bit, but before we do that, what other elements of uncertainty are striking either of you at this point?
Well, it looks like that there will be no appeal, and we see the fact that before we came in here today, the House Redistricting Committee decided they were going to hold a meeting on Monday. Doesn't say about what, but we assume it's about a legislative redraw. And so I think that is still a surprise. And it'd be interesting to hear the logic of why they don't want to appeal the ruling. Also, Senator Berger, when he put out a statement late yesterday, talked about moving forward with a nonpartisan map. What is that going to look like? What will be the criteria? How much the ruling requires a lot of transparency too about the process, where basically there's supposed to be a computer screen in the committee room that will draw the districts while people watch, which there's a lot of logistics issues there. And what will this mean for other states who have similar state constitutions or even something somewhat close to it? Will they see this as an avenue to make inroads on limiting what they see as the corrosive effects of partisan gerrymandering?
I think Gary hits the nail on the head right there, because what we're going to see, I think, in the next 2 weeks is going to be not just sausage making, but butchering of animals. I mean, I think a lot of what we see in redistricting, the map making, the actual map drawing, is behind closed doors, because it's the worst of the sausage making. It's, you know, it's a lot of minutiae, right, moving lines here or there, looking at, you know, certain data points. And I think it's a lot of data that the general public might care about, but they might not want to see it done themselves. It's a lot like watching paint dry, I would assume.
And needless to say about – she makes good points there. Needless to say also, this is 2020 next year. And so whoever's in charge of the legislature, barring a alteration in how they draw the maps through some sort of panel or something like this, the winner of the House and the Senate, whatever party, gets to control the map making for the next 10 years. And so you have got to think that the Republicans are, if they go ahead with drawing new maps, how will they try to draw a map so that they can somehow eke out a majority to keep the control of the map drawing in place? Now, on the Democratic side, they got closer this year, very close in the 2018 maps, and they've got to be just licking their chops, knowing that whatever comes out of this, they're going to have it would appear that they would have a good chance to take back both one or both chambers.
Right. All right. I'm going to ramble here for a second. I hope this is all helpful, but jump in here at any point. To that last point, Gary, as a reminder, we had supermajorities around here for 6 years, but it was the Democrats that picked up seats in both the House and Senate.
Yes.
I believe it was 6 in the Senate and 10 potentially, I'm doing this off the top of my head, in the House during the 2018 elections, ending those supermajorities. So any redraw would put the House and the Senate almost certainly in play for 2020, the majorities. I'm living in this Raleigh political bubble, so I will apologize and back up and just reset this thing and note that what we're talking about here is this ruling that came down from three state judges yesterday, two Democrats and a Republican, saying that in total 77 of the state's 170 legislative districts are unconstitutional, 56 from the House, 21 from the Senate. They're unconstitutional not on a racial gerrymandering challenge, but rather from being extreme partisan gerrymanders. Effectively, what the judges ruled was that these boundaries usurp the will of the people and that they violate the various clauses within the North Carolina Constitution, freedom of speech, freedom of assembly, freedom of elections, and equal protections. And they gave legislators 2 weeks to redraw the maps. when they do that, they have to do it with this, as you mentioned, Gary, this increased level of transparency, and the judges will get a look at the maps on the back end.
And there will be no use of elections data or election results. The judges made that clear.
And that's a change from what has been precedent, and that's important.
Yes, it is. I mean, and they certainly have to still comply with the Voting Rights Act, which relates to racial considerations. And the fact that there will be some what they call – the judges call a referee who will look at these maps and see if they comply with what the judges ordered on Tuesday.
It's also important to note with the referee, if the legislature doesn't finish the maps within the two-week deadline, the referee might be able to get to draw them himself for the court – him or herself, I should say.
Yeah.
So that's going to be – I think – the parties in the case have to submit names for the referee by the 6th, so that's Friday. A couple days from now. So, you know, we might see, there could be some former legislative attorney names thrown in there, some very respected attorneys just getting in there. But
Do you have a name you want to throw out or no?
I'm not going to throw out a name yet. I have my assumptions, but no one's gone on the record about that.
Go ahead.
It's just that referee position, I think, will be very important for this case.
It's not to overstate it, but that referee could have an impact on North Carolina maps for the next decade.
Sure. Is that, as it could have happened in the federal version of this case as it related to racial gerrymanders, they brought in the three-judge panel a few years ago, brought in a university professor who helped that, and he tweaked a handful of the districts. And so one of the other things I wanted to point out for maybe non-Raleigh bubble people is this 2 weeks window. Again, that's a lot. That's a quick turnaround, and some people might think that's, you know, that's crazy. But the state law says that. The state law says lays out that at a minimum 2 weeks have to be given to the legislature to redraw maps. They can receive more, but usually only when the legislature is not in session. And because of this budget stalemate, they are certainly still in session. Therefore, September 18th is the date in which they've been told to enact new maps, which don't, by the way, don't require a governor's signature, or it's not subject to veto power because state constitution says that.
They're not just here in session right now, but this was supposed to be a break for them. They were not supposed to be here this week. And right now it's looking like they're not going to be here next week. So that shortens the time frame even more.
Not this week. I think you said next week. Yeah. They won't be here this week. They will
be here next week. Yeah. They have to be here next week. There's a redistricting meeting happening. But that's going to shorten the time frame even more. So, you know, Speaker Moore has threatened weekend sessions before. We might actually get those weekend sessions next week.
It also makes me wonder what happens to the budget process and the end of session grinding that we've been doing for a couple months here. Mm-hmm. Will that get put aside for a couple weeks to focus squarely on this? Because again, redistricting in the balance of power and the control of this House and Senate is everything. And so they want to certainly get this right, not only to comply with the courts, but to potentially give at least the Republican leadership, give them a fighting chance to somehow squeeze out more seats in 2020, which again, it's still 14 months away, but clearly they're prepping now.
But it's 3 months from filing season.
That's right.
Yesterday when this ruling came down, it was 6 months to the day to the 2020 primary. Mm. So it is a relatively short window of time, and there is nothing to your – you basically just said this, Gary. It's the singularly most important thing that a legislature does is redistrict.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of the primary, that March primary that we just moved up not too long ago, if things don't go according to plan here, the court can move back the primary date, and which very well could happen. But, I mean, that's just another factor in all of this uncertainty we're dealing with right now.
On Twitter, at Gary D. Robertson, an Associated Press Statehouse reporter. On Twitter, at Lauren Horsch, that's H-O-R-S-C-H, reporter with the NC Insider. Wanted to ask you also what else struck you, if anything. I think that ruling or that provision within the ruling, Lauren, about judges reserving the right to move a primary date is pretty notable. What else struck you, if other things are on the notepads in front of you?
For me, I think Gary once described this as like a slam dunk, but there's just there's just little bits and pieces once you get into the nitty gritty of the ruling. And like I said, there are 357 pages, but the judges wrote that these maps were ruled unconstitutional and invalid because there is no reasonable doubt that they violated the state constitution. I think that is a very strong statement from this, you know, very strong ruling. This is just, they were very clear in why they were doing this. And I think a lot of people are still, you know, reading the ruling, still, you know, digesting it. But even early on in the ruling, the judges wrote, "The voters of this state since 2011 have been subjected to a dizzying succession of litigation over North Carolina's legislative and congressional districts in state and federal courts." I think they're really just laying out, I think, what we as reporters have been dealing with for, you know, close to a decade now.
I would offer one heading and then I'll turn to you, Gary. This is from the ruling. Defendants offered no meaningful defense of the 2017 plans. Mm. I'm not an editor. My grammar is terrible. If you listen to the podcast, you know that, and I probably never will be an editor. So I would not use the word scathing, but this was a strong ruling. Lauren said slam dunk. Gary, you and I were at the trial in July. And it's worth, again, reminding listeners that this was a two Democrat and one Republican panel. But this was a unanimous decision. This was not a split or divided bench.
And I think, you know, these are two separate situations. But earlier this decade, this same three-panel court, the same three-judge panel, excuse me, ruled in favor of the defendants, meaning the legislative Republicans, in a racial gerrymandering claim in which, if I remember, which is now maybe 5 years ago, it was in some ways kind of a deferential ruling to the role of the legislature and what they're doing and as drawing maps. This was not. This was the same three-judge panel made a very strong, aggressive ruling against the Republican legislature. Again, different situation, partisan gerrymandering versus racial gerrymandering. But I think the contrast was telling to me. And also, as you recall, I hope other people recall, there was a flap before the trial about the records, documents associated with Tom Hoffler, who was a Republican consultant who helped draw maps throughout this decade for North Carolina Republicans and for other states. When you go through the 357-page ruling, you see how much the judges relied on that in making determinations that there, in their view, there was little doubt that the maps, in their view, were drawn with the sole purpose of squeezing Republican, squeezing out as much Republican advantage to the detriment of the minority party, the Democrats. And so it goes to show how the recovery and the whole story, you can probably read about it online, about how the documents were obtained, how that in many ways changed this whole case.
I want to read one sentence that I think helps to encompass what you just touched on. It's from page 10 of the ruling, but the word sophisticated jumped out at me. The ruling says, "The court bases this on the inescapable conclusion that the 2017 enacted maps as drawn do not permit voters to freely choose their representatives, but rather representatives are choosing voters based upon sophisticated partisan sorting," close quote. That gets at some of what we've been talking about here today. I think we're going to leave it there. Is there a final thought from either of you? If not, I will not to force anything.
I just think that it'll be interesting to see whether there will be any challenges to the current congressional maps in state court based on this ruling yesterday, those same arguments, whether or not the congressional map for 2020 is subject to change because of the success that the plaintiffs had at the trial court yesterday.
And go ahead, Lauren.
I'm just going to say it's also, this is happening in a weird time where we're in the middle of a hurricane that's going to hit districts that have Republican leaders in them. So we got John Bell, who's in Wayne County, Harry Brown, who's in Onslow County. I mean, these are all they're leaders in the General Assembly. And if their districts get hit hard, we could be down members next week. It's going to be very complicated, especially if, you know, we do have a big disaster on our hands and we have to get other funding out to help relief. It's
just a 2-week window is tight, and it is extremely tight in the event of a hurricane, winds, rain, and perhaps residual flooding as well. Would also just note, and correct me if either of you two have had on the record or any kind of communication, but we have sought comment from Senator Phil Berger's office, Speaker Tim Moore's office, other lawmakers and staff today, but so far the word has been mum, relatively tight-lipped from those folks, as I think they continue to work through this ruling and understand it and make a plan for what is to come in the next couple of weeks. Thanks to both of you for coming on and chatting about this. Gary Robertson from the Associated Press, Lauren Horsch with the NC Insider. Thanks, gang.
Thank you.
Thank you.
As a reminder, we kind of sort of have two political podcasts coming from WUNC these days. Weekly conversations with lawmakers, journalists, strategists, like the one you just heard, are available wherever you achieve that on-demand listening. And there is also a review of North Carolina politics, state politics, that is, with a conservative and a progressive pundit, Becky Gray and Rob Schofield. You can catch that each Friday afternoon at 4:50 on WUNC. That's 91.5 FM. Or find the extended version of the chat between Becky and Rob at our website, WUNC.org. If you don't subscribe to the podcast already, I would encourage you to do so. iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, wherever it is that you get the pods. For Lauren and Gary, my name is Jeff Tiberi. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you again soon. No one else was in the room where it happened, the room where it happened, the room where it happened. No one else was in the room where it happened, the room where it happened, the room where it happened. No one really knows how the game is played, the art of the trade, how the sausage gets made. We just assume that it happens. No one else is in the room where it happens.